And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, October 12th, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 35. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
And I'm RJ.
And welcome to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228. That is 334-272-9228. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat as well as on Facebook. You can email us, everyone, at ingamechat.net. And we're streaming live right now, the cam feed. It's on Twitch TV. You can go check that out and watch the show live. You can find us there and as well as join in the chat room live while we broadcast. Hello, everybody joining us in the chat room. It's a chat room full of moderators at the moment. And we got two people. Lavos, who just is in there all the time. So he'll pop in a minute. And Ghost Bear just showed up. And we've got, what is that, Marn Smith, I think, if I'm reading that right. I can't read. But anyway. They're all in there, so welcome to the show. Your Twitter feeds will be updating that you're watching this very shortly once we get your information. That was a joke. It was very bad. So, welcome to the show. As you can tell, I sound a little bit nasty because I have had the nasties since, like, Sunday when you came over to the house for, what are you picking up? Oh, you're getting From the Earth to the Moon. That's what you were getting.
I was.
Yeah, yeah. You went and saw Gravity, and then you were like, hey, I want to see space done right.
Yeah.
and so you got that miniseries from me. And I was like, yeah, I'm just feeling, because you had come down with something.
I did, about 10 minutes after I came over to your house.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't spread that stuff around. But yeah, so I've been under the weather, but not under the weather enough to not play anything. I can tell you, if Beyond Two Souls was your typical type action, shoot 'em, first person, whatever, I probably would not have been able to do it. It just would have been, my attention would have just been, I'm just going to take a nap, you know. But I could almost take a nap while playing Beyond Two Souls and still be okay playing it. So yeah, anyway, we're going to be talking about Beyond Two Souls tonight. We're going to talk about The Wolf Among Us. We'll hit up some news topics here and there. We'll talk about the new next-gen systems, as we always do. We're going to have an interview coming up at 7 o'clock. So stick around for that. Cameron Petty and Martin Smith, they're from Jump Corps Productions, and they've got a game called Undead Overlord. It is currently on Kickstarter right now, and it's got about 19 days left. They're trying to raise $60,000. They have almost 13, and they've got about 19 days to go to raise the rest of that. And hopefully they can make it. Trust me, I've seen Kickstarters with a lot bigger of a gap to make, and they've done it within the last 48 hours of being active. Neverending Nightmares did that just a few weeks ago, actually. Was another one I supported, and I thought, they're not going to make it. And my God, they pulled it out in the last 12 hours of that Kickstarter campaign. So, yeah, anyway, Undead Overlord, we'll talk about that coming up at 7 o'clock when we interview those guys. But in this first hour, just going to let you know that we're going to have some spoiler talk. We'll get into spoilers, I guess, won't we?
I don't see how there's any way you can talk meaningfully about Beyond Two Souls without being riddled with spoilers. Yeah. I really hate that. I don't want people to tune out for a large section of the show. It's not a particularly long game, so I imagine a number of people who have decided to try to play it have likely already beaten it or gotten significantly far. I think, you know, it's a PS3 exclusive here in the waning hours of the PS3's life. It's a David Cage game, which instantly puts it out of the running for an awful lot of people. You know, I don't know how many people we're going to affect negatively if we talk spoilers, but I don't see how we talk about it without them. There is simply no meaningful discussion to be had if you don't talk about the choices that you made, the impact that did or did not have, and how you felt about it.
Yeah.
So we'll try to divide them up, I reckon.
Yeah, we'll try and make sure that you know exactly, like, and there comes the spoiler talk. We'll try very hard to do that, but just keep in mind that as we go into this, they are bound to pop up, and we will try and keep our heads above the water of saying, hey, spoiler here, and then go into it so that you don't get spoiled. If you're that interested, again, like James said, it's at the end. That was something that we talked about before we came on the show. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna grab the extra endings of this thing. I'm gonna send it back to Redbox, and then that's it for the life of my PlayStation 3. It's done. My PlayStation 3 is done. My 360 has been done for a while, but that's it. It's over with. So it's. That was the last of my current gen systems. Everything that's going to be released from here until the next gen systems, I can play on the PC.
Is that really it? Are they both done now? Was this, barring anything strange, this is it?
For me, this is it. Yeah.
All right.
I could not think of anything. Everything else that comes out. Batman was a touchy one because I was like, I don't want to get it on PC. I might rent it and play it. But of course,
you found a really good deal for the PC.
I pulled that
version.
Amazing thing out. You know, there's and I'll talk. We'll talk about this right now. Hey, whatever. We'll talk. We'll go anywhere. This is going to be a show of old where we randomly went in odd directions. We talked about this last week about me wanting to play the Batman game, but knowing that they're going to have a
Arkham
game,
Origins.
Arkham Origins, but knowing that they're going to have a game of the year that's going to get released March, something like that. It's going to include all the DLC for the thing. Steam will have discounts. It'll be cheap eventually. So I won't be able to play it in the moment. Unless, of course, I rent it for my current gen consoles. That is, by the way, Batman Arkham Origins is not getting a release like Assassin's Creed 4 or Watch Dogs or Battlefield 4, where it's going to be released on current gen and next gen systems. It is only a current gen system title and PC. So that was the only way I was going to get it. So I looked up on eBay. What happens every now and again is that NVIDIA, I believe AMD, or is it AMD? Yeah, AMD. ATI, whatever.
There's no more ATI.
I know,
it's
but
AMD.
It's a
almost completely defunct branding thing. Yeah. You can still find things labeled with it, but it's AMD.
Yeah. So AMD, with their graphics cards, and NVIDIA with theirs, will sometimes bundle packages. Buy our latest card, you get this free game. And a lot of people buy the cards and don't want the game. It's either not their style of game, or they somehow got the cards at a really good discount and want to sell off the game to make a few extra bucks back. And they put those, and they could only do this with the PC versions of these titles. They
sure.
put those on eBay. And I found Batman Arkham Origins on eBay for $25. So I picked it up for PC. And you run a risk because, number one, it's eBay. Number two, it deals with, you know, sort of a non-physical item. You know, it's a code that somebody has to send you. So giving them your money and then hoping they give you what you paid for and that it's legitimate is a concern. This guy came through, did his little same day delivery is what he was like. You buy it, within 24 hours, I will send you the code that you have to enter at NVIDIA's site. Once you do that, NVIDIA sends you the Steam code, and it was instantaneous. Had it that same night. So,
Truth Unknown in the chat room makes a very good point that even if you are interested in the game, if you're purchasing two cards or multiple cards specifically to run in SLI
or Crossfire,
yeah. That yields duplicates.
Nice.
Because in order to do, well, you have to buy two cards.
Yeah, you have to buy the two, yeah.
So you just buy two matched cards. They're going to come with the same deal. So, yeah, that's a very good point as well.
Yeah, so I picked it up, and it's a route you can go, and just, you know, buyer beware on that. I didn't have any problem. It was the first time I'd ever done it, and it worked. So look into that. You get a Steam code for this. If anybody is, Ubisoft gets in on this a lot. Splinter Cell Blacklist was an offer for some of the cards back when it was getting released. Assassin's Creed 3 was, I don't know about 4. The situation with those is that you will not get a Steam code. You will get a Uplay code that will not activate on Steam. You'll have to play it through Uplay. So there are some caveats to be said. It depends on the game that's being offered. But just do your research, and there's a ton of them on there still for like $25-$26 for the game. So good stuff. Anyway, that being said...
what is that? That is beyond, not this coming week.
That's the 25th. So
this is a light week.
Yeah, this
us.
Coming week is a light week. It's a nice little break in between. So
we're on the road this week, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. and then it'll pick. Boy, will it pick back up? Because then it's just going to be week after week after week, going into the next gen systems. But as it stands, Beyond Two Souls was the last game that I'll be playing on my current gen systems for me. That's it.
I have Journey left.
Ah,
I have not finished Journey.
That's a good one, yeah.
Okay. I've got probably, I don't know what the overall playtime of that is, a few hours, it's something
I
like
think,
that.
I think it's Wolf Among Us, Walking Dead episode type situation.
Yeah, a couple hours. I think yeah. I've probably got very little left, but I need to finish that. And then, barring the occasional Blu-ray, the PS3 will be
That's right, yeah, Blu-ray
done.
Player, I forget about that. But although the next-gen systems are Blu-ray players in themselves, but if you're not going that route, you may still be using your
And I know I've brought this up a few times. I just don't think I'm going to go that route.
Yeah.
And it kind of, I hurt my own feelings with this. I was really looking forward to the PS4. I was right in there, day one pre-order.
Well, we were
really enjoyed the idea of having a launch system
for
the first time.
As it came closer and closer, the fog started to clear on what's going to be there. It's like the initial hype of, like, here's the system, here's the price, you're cheaper, this is great, everything's right. wonderful, unicorns and rainbows. Once that all settled down, the fog had cleared, you kind of look at it, you step back a little bit, and you rationalize and think, what am I going to do with this system now that I have it? What am I going
to
play?
And that is a different... There are different answers to that question depending on what kind of gamer you are.
Yeah.
And being a predominantly PC gamer, I came up with Bupkis.
I know.
Almost nothing. There are things I could play day one to satisfy myself that I had something for that console. Killzone was the one thing that I was thinking the most about. There are things to play on either system, but in every case, the majority of those cross-gen, cross-platform titles, I would far rather play on my PC. Going to have much more fun there. I'd rather spend that money putting more hardware in my PC, upgrading different components, things like that. I don't harbor any ill will towards either one, honestly, but I just don't really feel like spending the money on it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. If I weren't the kind of guy I was that wanted these things when they released... and was rational in my purchasing decisions, excuse me, I would look at this and say, I don't need these right now. I really don't. There's nothing there for me. At the launch, there isn't. There rarely ever is, honestly. If I go back to my 360 days, there was nothing there. I was buying things that I don't normally play just because they were available. Mm-hmm. Bought Dead or Alive 5, and I am not a fighting guy. Mm-hmm. But I bought it and took it back, I think, eventually. But it was, you know... There was nothing. I thought Fight Night.
When you first got HD programming on your HD TV years and years ago,
what did I do?
We watched golf.
Yeah,
and we watched football
because it was pretty.
And because it was what was available. That was the only programming that they were producing, and it was enough of a shock to the system, enough of a pretty thing to look at that it was worth doing.
Yeah,
I bought I think collectively at the old Planet Games shop in 2002. Bought Madden for the PS2. Or no, it was 2001, I guess. I don't know.
Collectively, you all bought that?
Somebody paid the money for it.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
know. But we bought Madden
because
it looked fantastic and it had that really amazing rewinding like time feature, that feature that would allow you to like pause a scene and like advance it, rewind it kind of in real time. So somebody would just throw the ball at another guy and we would replay that scene over and over again and marvel at how good it looked. Because you had to do something on your brand new system.
Yeah. But anyway, that's where James sits with the new systems. RJ here has also beaten Beyond Two Souls, by the way. And you're on the wait for it. You're going to get a PS4.
Yeah, eventually I'll get one, but I think the last time I bought a system at launch was a Dreamcast back in 99. Yeah. I think that's the last time I bought a system at launch. Every other time after that, it's been sit and wait and see because I'm waiting for the library to build up, to be honest with you, before I invest the money into the system.
I know that you get a lot of crap from listeners and from us because you don't ever go the 360 route, but you're still the most level-headed person on the show as far as your decisions in purchasing games, systems, whatever else. I look to you for the rational decision, then I just go my own way.
Hey, if nothing else, now you'll be back on what the majority of gamers probably consider the primary platform. Again, instead of being, not like the PS3 was an outlier, but, you know, so many people had focused their multiplayer and their multi-platform stuff over on the Xbox.
Right, that's true.
That's not going to be true anymore.
Yeah. That'd be nice.
Get to play some games with you. Not going to be out of the cold where that's concerned, at least from our point of view.
The only problem will be for us will be, you know, if a game gets a multi-platform release and gets PC involved in that.
Yeah.
Because that's, and nine times out of ten, that's where we'll go for it. So
yeah, your primary is the PC. You have a better
experience. It really is. You know, I put a lot of money into that thing, and I like it when games look good.
Yeah.
And so
it,
I love to stretch its muscles, which I'm going to be able to do with Watch Dogs and Battlefield 4 and stuff like that. I'll be able to really make that thing... you know, shine and use it to what I put all the money in it for. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, the graphics card that I put in there hasn't been able to flex itself like that. The whole system that I built there has not been able to flex itself.
Have you installed the Battlefield 4?
No, I need to, but I have not done that yet.
Okay.
So, where do you go get that? Do you just go to Origin? Do you
Origin,
have to install it
yes.
through Origin? Okay, I'll do that. I'll fire that up when I get home.
It's not a problem.
Yeah. And get that. Just remind me to do that, and I will do that.
And they've actually patched the They've patched the beta pretty consistently, pretty regularly, and the performance is, the performance increases, the stability, all of it's improved. It's a much better game already than where it was a couple of weeks ago when it first launched. Or a little over a week ago, rather.
Yeah.
I have high hopes that the final product will be really good.
Well, should we move on to Beyond? Should we talk about that? If you're here's the thing. Right? Again, we go into spoilers and stuff like this. I know that on the front page of Colony of Gamers, we have our stream, and it's playing live. If anybody,
I really hate that. I really I wish hate there that was we a, can't figure out a... I don't like that we're just... I don't like that.
I don't like it either. I don't like it when other sites do it. I don't like it when our site does it. I wish there was a way that we could... I don't know. Ghostbear's in the chat room. Not that he's going to figure that out, but he knows what we're talking about. Because we do get complaints every now and then. Is there any way we can not make this autoplay? I would like to figure out a way to do that, but it's going to be autoplaying, and I hope we do not spoil the game for somebody while this is going on.
I don't
on,
care enough so. Not to say any spoilers, though. So
yeah, no, I agree. I agree. So picked it up on Tuesday.
Now, look, for anybody that isn't already aware, small history lesson, this is... It's not fair to call it an auteur project, but this is actually, it's not a one-man show, right?
No, no,
but,
you're right.
But it is absolutely...
I like that description, though.
David Cage.
Yeah.
This is this man's, it's yes, it's Quantic Dream, but it's David Cage. And in a lot of people's minds, those things are synonymous. You can expect a certain type of storytelling, a certain type of narrative, progression, dialogue, gameplay, interface, funk.
You can also expect reviews to be a nice split.
Usually pretty mixed.
Yeah.
Along a lot of different lines for different reasons.
It is,
but it's the same company, same guy who did Heavy Rain, also only on the PS3, and previously last generation he did Fahrenheit,
Indigo Prophecy,
Indigo Prophecy, kind of depending on which region you were in.
Yeah.
But it is. It is his most recent project, and it's worth pointing out that he's got a stormy history with gamers and reception, critical reception, fan reception. It's to say it's a mixed bag isn't even fair. People are incredibly polarized about his work. So I will admit that I had an enormous bias going into this game. I hated Heavy Rain. I hated it. I hated the control. I hated the narrative. I hated the characters. I really hated the voice acting. There wasn't anything about it that I liked. Literally that it ended was the finest point in that game. It is, in many ways to me, the second worst video game ever made. Behind Assassin's Creed 3. I despised it. I felt tortured for the entire time I played it. I did not have fun. It was a terrible obligation for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt a little bit of a call towards Beyond. A, as a nice way to send off my PS3. B, you know, if it really was so comically bad that I couldn't stand it, I could just rag on David Cage for an hour on the show.
Yeah.
But mostly because I sensed that there was a little bit of... He had advanced his technique a little bit. Or that's what I thought, and I wanted to see if that was just me wanting to like it.
Well, you know, when a guy like this is so central to the production of a game, I mean, we don't say he's a one-man show, but this is his child, his baby, his, you know,
right.
It's...
His fingerprints are all over.
Yeah, you know, it's very Ken Levine with
yes.
Bioshock to Bioshock Infinite type of situation, whereas, all right, you got your complaints from the last game you did, what have you done to improve upon... because you're always willing to give these people more chances because you think, well, they've got to improve upon because they had these complaints, especially if they're overwhelming complaints about how you build your game or how you have your gameplay involved and that sort of thing. What did you do to improve that and hopefully make it better for me? So I will give you that chance and try it. But and you hope that happens. It also goes to the effect that two very well known actors. Involved in this.
Yes.
People that...
Not three. Just,
huh? Three,
don't,
yes,
don't
three.
Count Kadeem Hardison out of this. Come
I thought
on.
You said free, and I was like, no, they didn't work for free. No,
come on.
Three, yes.
I was really happy to see Dwayne Wayne in this.
I did not know it until...
I just wanted him to have some flip-up sunglasses.
I know, and never once did it show up in there. And it's like, oh, come on, you
I
can't put
so
that in there.
Bad.
Or just mention where he went to school or something.
Right,
I
right.
don't know.
Anything. Or, you know, his old girlfriend, Whitley. Like, anything. Any little piece of fan service would have helped me out, and I would have adored it. But I actually thought he was a really good piece of balance between otherwise...
He was, yeah.
Top-end, A-list, continuously working actors.
It was a little creepy when you first meet him, because I thought, but that whole situation, you're a little girl, and he's a doctor, and you're like...
Creepy defines the majority of the scenes in this game, yeah. So... There's certainly nothing wrong with that.
But as for me, as the game went on, he became the anytime I got to have a scene with him, I was like, oh, good. This is going to be nice. Yeah. This will be nice, and I don't have to deal with things. Or I will, but it'll be better because he's here. Because he'll keep me safe, or he'll keep things safe. So, the other assessment of this and how the game's going to be is that, well, these three people are involved. They're very well known. They're not going to, number one, look at a script and say that, well, I don't really want to do this, or this is not something I need on my career, or I've got right. other things to do than sit here and do this game
right.
with you.
Right, that Willem Dafoe and...
Ellen Page.
Juno, Ellen Page, choose to associate themselves with it. I don't like actor worship. I don't believe in it.
Right.
I really
yeah,
hate
yeah.
that it's a runaway problem. But I have to think, you don't need this. You're not begging for work.
Right.
So I'm going to think that you've done your homework at least a little bit. You've read the scripts. You have some understanding that this probably isn't going to be a huge detractor for you. It isn't going to dirty your name. I mean, Willem has done an enormous number of very strange things already. So what does he care? But, I just had to believe that people were willing to associate themselves with this because they believed somewhat in the quality. That helped me kind of bridge a lot of my dislike for this guy. And it is, in my opinion, a fundamentally more interesting tale. It's a better premise. It's outlandish. It's ridiculous. It all centers around one girl, her life told out of order, jumbled, and it is the story of her association with a supernatural entity.
Yeah.
And what effect that has on her life, what effect she has on the people around her, the people that she is raised by, the circumstances of her birth, and the nature of her relationship with different nefarious government agencies that want to use her power and develop it for their own purposes. It's... not exactly standard. It's understandable enough in Western fiction, but I thought that it was an interesting take. I really liked the concept a lot more. And after Heavy Rain, I really liked the idea of focusing on a single character.
Well, RJ, what did you played Heavy Rain, correct?
Yeah, I played Heavy Rain all the way through.
Where were you on Heavy Rain? As far as, like, did you...
The aspect I liked about it the most was murder mystery. I've always been a fan of murder mysteries, and so I expected to deal with multiple people, everybody working together, to get toward the same goal, find out who the murderer was or where the child was, the latest victim of it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, when you tell a story, when I play a game based on story, you got about 5 minutes to keep me interested. Since Heavy Rain was a murder mystery, like I said, it kept me interested in this game. Beyond Two Souls, the story, like you described, supernatural shenanigans and whatnot, you know, it kept my interest a while. But my issue was really the disjoint story all over the place. That's what really got
me. Can we take a pause right there, starting with you? Can we get, like, just generally an up or a down? I'm not asking you to assign a number, mm-hmm. and we can go into details over the course of the next half hour, but in general, up or down on this game? Because I was way down. I was in the hole on Heavy Rain.
Mm-hmm.
But where are you? Are you flat, or are you positive or kind of negative about this game?
Average. I mean, it's not, I'm not like, definitely not worth paying a I wouldn't pay full
yeah,
price for it.
I would have to agree that
not pay full price for it.
I don't see this being a $60 kind of affair. It's a tough thing to do. Replay not being worth a whole lot.
I have to give some quantification to it. I feel like a C+, maybe B minus around that area.
Yeah, I was flat with I was flat with liking it a little bit better than I did Heavy Rain, and I liked Heavy Rain some.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain aspects, and again, we'll go into it in the next half hour. There are certain aspects that I could not stand about this game.
Yeah.
And we'll go into it in the next half hour. And I'll tell you, we'll just go ahead and take our break now.
Well, I'm interested here because I can justify myself. Don't get me wrong. I'm always able to justify my strange opinions.
I'm not really worried about that.
I can't call it a good game.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. And I was extremely surprised.
I'm really surprised by that, yeah.
I really enjoyed my time with it. I played it over the course of about 4 days, and I got to tell you, the highest praise I can say, and I could complain every day, and I would compare notes every day with Jeremy, but he and I both had to agree. At the end of my workday, I was very much looking forward to going home and playing it some more, and it's not often I say that even about a very good game. So, yes, next half hour, we go down into the details because I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say.
We will. We'll be back, and we'll be talking about Beyond Two Souls. Coming up next on In Game Chat, we'll be right back. Welcome back to In-Game Chat. Oddly enough, the music there from Heavy Rain came up in the rotation. Did not place that there. So, there you go. Spooky stuff. Anyway, welcome back to the show. We're going to go over our, our likes, our dislikes, what we kind of liked about Beyond Two Souls, what we may have not liked about Beyond Two Souls. RJ and mine's complaint, and maybe James here as well. The one thing that bothered me a lot are there are some scenes in the game that have a sense of urgency, and the character of Jody will just walk to where you're trying to make her go instead of at least a little bit more of a jog or something that has a little bit more that fits with the sense that the game has given me, this urgent situation. There was, it is the scene near the end when they're about to go into the Black Sun room.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you have Cole with you, whether you don't, whatever the case may be in that situation, Ryan calls over to her and says, "Hey, let's go, let's do this." And I'm like, "Okay, I'm going to go over there and do it," because I'm on one side of the room and he's on the other. And she just walks over there. And I thought, no, you would be like, you'd be moving a little bit faster to get over there. She just walks. And there was a few other times that happened in the game. I remember, I think I told you about it once. We were doing GChat or something. You'd said, "Where are you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm doing this." And she's taking her time getting over there to the thing. Yeah. So
I like to tell myself that one of the best things we can possibly do when looking at these games is not talk ourselves out of our own enjoyment. I think that's a little bit at odds with one of the other things I always say, which is not doing a developer or a publisher or an advertiser's job for them. I found myself realizing while playing Beyond that the 5 out of 10 reviews, the 2-star reviews, they all made perfect sense. If you decided to look at it and examine every tree in the forest, you could find something ill, something unlikable, something broken, something inhuman, uncanny valley, anything. You could find those things in every chapter. No chapter on its own worked. There was something terrible, something broken, something uncomfortable, or just plain stupid in every one of them. But if I met the game halfway, if I realized that this wasn't about a series of supernatural events, it wasn't even necessarily about any particular conflict, that it was about a person, that it was about a character who was living through unrealistic, unbelievable circumstances, but it was about a person. And if I just met the game halfway, took a step back from it, not a lot, but just a single step, and considered the game, considered the experience, I found myself endeared to it. I don't really, really love it. I don't. But I found that I was actually really enjoying a lot of what Cage has tried to do. In the past, I've recognized that the guy is trying something that I thought was garbage. And I don't want to talk about games as art anymore. I don't care. I just care about how I feel when I spend time in front of something I choose to play.
Yeah.
But this time, he still screwed it up. He still has an imperfect, ridiculous understanding of American colloquialisms. If you want to write about French people, then write about French people. But if you're going to commit yourself to writing for Americans in a firmly American story, hire an American to stand next to you and tell you when your dialogue is crap. Because your grammar might be correct, right? There's an instance in particular early on in the timeline. I can't remember where you actually play it, but it's when Jody is at home during Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
She wanders upstairs. She, little girl Jody, 9 years old at this point, I think is what they called her, teeters into the parents' bedroom, has Iden knock a box off of the top shelf. And she pulls a photograph out of it. And it's the first opportunity in the gameplay sequence that you have to test the little flashback mechanic.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she picks it up. This is a little 9-year-old girl. She picks up the picture and senses that there's something strange about it. And like I said, this is the first possibility you have to use this particular mechanic. Gives you insight into some little flash of someone else's story or their history or something like that. And she says, there's something awfully strange about this picture, as if it were vibrating. And I'm like, you're 9. You wouldn't say that. A 9-year-old girl would not say this. Yes, your grammar is quite good. If she's 29 and you know, I don't know, like...
It would be a lot more simple than
it
that.
It would be something simple, like it's like weird and shaky or something. She would say it like a little kid. Mm-hmm. So just if he just he's missing that last his grammar, his writing is in the uncanny valley.
That's a very good point, yeah.
It misses the point and the target, and I think that it was particularly bad in places here. I thought that the primary actors did a really, really good job delivering most of the dialogue, but mm-hmm. I thought that a lot of his balance was way, way off. And that's always a problem because it just yanks you right out of whatever kind of scene you might have been in, however else it might have been effective or ineffective. Yeah.
Throws your focus off.
Right.
Yeah.
The birthday party did that for me, just for the mm-hmm. fact that, and somebody mentioned this in the gaff thread, and I like the way that they put it.
Yeah.
When everybody started twirling their mustaches all of a sudden, out of nowhere.
Apropos of nothing.
They just became evil.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously it's...
What? She gave you a book? Throw her in the closet. Like, it didn't make any sense. It made no sense whatsoever.
It did. It was horrible. It was horrible.
And that's exactly what you know to expect from a Cage game. So mm-hmm. that happens, and you're like, roll my eyes, you know, and I'm going to tally it up. And this is exactly how I played Heavy Rain. And almost every tally went into the are you kidding me category instead of me just being really drawn into the experience.
Yeah.
And it was way off balance way early on. But this one... I really do think he did a couple of things that were good. So if you're going to examine every element, I understand those terrible review scores, and I understand people who don't like it. I'll even let you get away with the discussion that it isn't even a game, because I know where you're coming from about that. Mm. But I got to tell you, I understand the 10s, the 9s and the 10s and the 5 out of 5s. I understand those as well. I think... This is the kind of game that is all about what you bring with you to the game. And there are other elements that are going to work one way or the other. RJ, you very specifically mentioned the gameplay sequence. And it's one of the biggest, I don't want to call it a gimmick. It's an actual plot device, a narrative device, actually, mm-hmm. where there is a timeline of events. What is something like 25 separate events you play through?
I'd say it was 25 or 26, yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them are 10 minutes long. Some of them are an hour and 10 minutes long. But you play them out of order, mm-hmm. wildly out of order.
And you can get to the objective of whatever that is a lot quicker or longer than somebody else playing
right.
can get to the objective.
Yeah, you said like 25 minutes. Some instances it took me like five.
Yeah, just some of them are awfully, awfully quick. Mm-hmm. But I know that a lot of people could not stand that progression.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, I think it's actually what makes the game as good as it possibly can be. There were moments when I was playing the 9-year-old character, guiding that 9-year-old character through certain scenes, right? And you're having to live through, if you're willing to recognize the emotional state he's trying to give you, if you're willing to listen to what he's trying to say, you're looking at what this little 9-year-old kid has to deal with. A family that doesn't want her, a real family that doesn't exist, this incredible, weird burden that she has no concept of how to rationalize or deal with. And she's institutionalized. There's nothing warm or comforting or familiar or good in her life. And you're naturally going to want to believe that things get better for this kid. But because you've already played portions of her future, you know that's not true. You know it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. You know that there's a time in her life when she's on the run from the law. You know there's a time in her life when she's homeless and living on the streets in a terrible winter, shacked up with bums beneath an overpass. You know that she's going to be abused sexually and physically, emotionally. You know there's a good chance she's going to die. So I found that if I were playing this in order, by the time I got to some of the more... By the time I got out of her formative years and into the years where conflict kind of controlled her life, I would have lost the sense of who she had been, who she's always been. Because playing her as an adult and then jumping back to the child, then back to the adult again, I remember that this isn't just some... She's not just some girl. She's not just some woman with just another power. She's still that little girl who's never been able to escape her imaginary friend. I thought that it was a really, really interesting way to tell that specific element of this character, and I don't think the game would have worked without it. Any more than I think Memento makes sense when you watch it in the right order, you know? And a lot of what he did in this game did not work. A lot of it was functionally garbage. But I think for the first time, the man actually did something that resonated with me at all. And I have to agree, I would never pay $60 for this game. I'll never play it again, and I don't have any interest in playing it again.
The first time I got to play as Aiden in that room as a little girl, where I could name what the cards were.
Yes, during the experiment.
The very first time you got to play and do that, that was like, well, you've got me hooked for the rest of your game, regardless, because this is a great little concept. I enjoy the fact that I can manipulate these things and freak these people out and whatever. Mm-hmm. Very, very much like that. So your hook is in me. I just hope that your story and everything else can maintain and keep me interested, I guess.
Right.
In parts it did. Parts I was so bored.
It was up and down.
It was. There were parts that I was bored. And I'm trying to go back and remember some. Well, there was a lot more boring parts for me than there was... interesting parts. Almost every time I became a little girl, I thought, well, there's not going to be a lot of action here. I'm going to have to deal with either monsters coming at me or just learning my ability again, which for the most part, I've kind of learned my stuff here playing as older Jody and whatever the case may be. But the little girl scenes were more about, most of them were more about not jump scares, but some type horror elements. I know there were at least twice that I had to walk into a dark room.
Yeah. It was helplessness.
That's a good point. Yeah.
They were acclimating you to a sense of that character's helplessness and the fact that she had not grown accustomed to her own circumstances.
Yeah, they're putting you in the life of a 9-year-old, 8-year-old.
And again, imagine if you will that the story had been told in order.
Right.
How honestly boring.
I know.
Who would have gotten past the halfway point?
Yeah.
Instead of quitting somewhere between the third and the fourth little girl scene.
Exactly.
I actually do think, on reflection, that it is one of the best forms of presentation I've ever seen. For what this particular thing is trying to do. It keeps every part of who she is fresh in the minds of any person playing the game. It eases up on that quantum leap mechanic mm-hmm. in the last third as it really starts to drive toward the ending. And
the sections seem to be getting longer and longer at that point.
Right,
too.
Right. They're more deliberate. They're more action oriented.
Well, they feel like they're. It feels like, okay, we're moving along to get to our.
Right.
We got to get to our destination here.
Right.
We got to
And like most things, I didn't think the ending, the third act. I didn't think the third act was particularly
strong.
It's
hard to tell what the third act is if you're.
It can be.
Yeah. If your game is jumbled like this.
Right. But again, on reflection, I thought that it was the weaker element. It is not the direction I necessarily would have gone.
Would it be from the dinner on?
In terms of the actual timeline, no, I think it would be her restoration to being in the hands of the CIA after her escape and her running away and being hunted and on the lam.
Ah, gotcha. Okay, yeah. Right.
It would be after that. It would be the closing in.
So it's right after Navajo.
In terms of gameplay,
in terms of gameplay, it's right after Navajo.
And I think, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I think that Navajo was actually... I don't believe that belonged in the game.
That, you know, looking back on it, and I was just thinking here as you were trying to form your thought just there, was that if that section was not in the game...
It would make no difference whatsoever.
There is no... You're
None.
Exactly right.
It was internally consistent and fine, and I thought that it was okay, but it felt like something that didn't belong in the story
yeah.
at all. There was no reason to believe she should be in that part of the country. She wasn't on her way to anything that was there, and it had no... Unfortunately... had no effect on the narrative. I thought that they had laid a clue at the end of Navajo to what the entire point would be,
mm-hmm.
what the mystery and the riddle of the supernatural elements would be.
Yep.
And it doesn't really matter. I have my own fan theory that I've built around what I thought that should have been. As it turns out, it was much more predictable and less interesting, but as a result, made Navajo completely pointless. That was an hour that didn't need to be in the
game. It was a long gameplay section that had... No bearing, really, on anything,
no.
with the exception of a choice at the end of the game.
It simply colored the choice.
I know.
It didn't make the choice.
No, it doesn't make the choice, but it gives that option there. And then on the other side, there's multiple choices, multiple endings. As you know, on the other ending, they had to have more people to show if you had chosen the other aspect.
Yes.
But otherwise, you would have gotten...
There was a literal
one to two people.
Life and death choice at the end.
There is, yes.
And how you color each of those choices felt a little bit rushed and a little bit incomplete.
God, anybody listening to this that hasn't played or never plays or don't understand a word.
No, and that's perfectly it's very much an experiential kind of thing.
It
if
is.
You want to talk about how it felt to actually play it, it felt, you know, like it felt like trying to play a game with all your fingers cut off. It's terrible. The gameplay is mostly terrible. I did think it was better than Heavy Rain. I thought Heavy Rain was just tragically bad.
The dialogue choices, or there are no dialogue choices. It's a emotional reaction, basically.
Yes.
So your dialogue can be an emotional reaction. Sometimes there is a yes or no equivalent of a choice.
Right.
But I thought these were better. I thought the emotion that I picked better reflected the dialogue that came with it.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
And it's... You know, it was certainly derived from Heavy Rain's controls. I just felt like things were much better suited. I didn't have as many, I had almost no opportunities to say that I intended one thing and got another thing. That almost never happened. I thought that it was much more direct. Felt to me much more like I was playing Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for that was good.
Yeah, I remember Heavy Rain having a lot of... right stick, quarter circle motions and whatnot. Start from the top and roll it forward. Okay, I did that wrong. Did it again wrong. Had to do it like four or five times before I got it right. And this one is merely just pointing the stick in the proper direction.
Right.
Need to be.
It had
dumbed it down. Made
it
real
had
simple.
A number of rotational inputs, but it seemed like it was much
full
more
circle.
Willing to accept
was,
what I did.
Those were full
there
circle
were a couple
rotations.
Of,
though, yeah.
She did quarter circles when she was
dancing as a
boogieing
little girl.
At the party.
Mm. Yeah.
In her sad, alone on the dance floor kind of thing.
Yeah. And I told you, I played that section twice, going through it completely different ways to see if a different outcome.
Revenge and no revenge. Right. Kiss, no kiss.
Exactly. Just to, and I played it. The first time I played it through, she was very. I played Jody as a very receptive person, trying to get a friendship, trying to make sure that I'll be liked and that this. I trying not to be the awkward kid, you know? Trying to be sociable and stuff. I played it that way.
Oh, and did you make your choices based on how you felt or how you thought she felt?
I based it on how I thought I felt.
How you felt.
Yeah. Okay. If I was going to go with her felt, she wouldn't be at the party to begin with. Because she did not want to be there. If I was going on the way she felt, it would. And I did play it the second time that way. Mm. Completely just disassociated. Anything that gave me a choice to back away from a conversation would back away from. Mm-hmm. When the guy comes down and sits down next to you and tries to, you know, get to know you, everything was either reserved or distant, you know? Yeah. That's all I would ever pick on the second time I played it. The first time I played it, again, trying to make friends, it still comes back to bite me in the end.
Yeah.
Whenever they turn on me, he still says the same thing, you know, and is completely mean to me. If I go distant and don't do any of that, he still says the same thing, and the same actions come out. It's one of those situations where, and they talk about this in reviews, and we talked about this in Walking Dead, choices don't necessarily matter up until near the very end.
I think it's tough to say that. I think that's the wrong phrase, and I think we should take a second to identify what certain phrases actually mean and why The Walking Dead, Telltale in general, gets away with it and why they're right. Choices matter. It doesn't mean... Life and death choice is a choice.
Yeah.
Right? But how I choose to respond to somebody who... It isn't going to affect the outcome of the scene. But it matters. The presentation matters. And Telltale in particular is very specific in their language. They say you tailor the experience with your choices.
Mm-hmm.
Much like you tailor a shirt. It's still the same shirt, man. Still got the same colors, the same stripes. It's got a collar or it doesn't have a collar. But it is tailored to fit who you are.
Yeah.
The choices you make are about how you feel about the game. If you expect everything that you do to reflect in some sort of branching path...
Yeah, it would take forever. Yeah.
It is simply unfair.
Take forever to make.
I want that.
Too much money to make.
I want that. Yeah. But you didn't even really get that in the Choose Your Own Adventure books from 30 years ago. Even those didn't have nearly as many choices as you would like. And that was words on paper.
Yeah.
You know, if something like that can't even be effectively branched and scripted, you have to recognize that what you're doing is you're looking at a much tighter narrative. Heavy Rain actually was able to reflect lots more probabilities in terms of being able to accommodate people dying in particular. But when it did that, it made the narrative so broad, so lifeless, because it had to accommodate anybody dying. So nobody really mattered that much in the end. This is the choice you make when you have a tight narrative full of meaningful characters who have identity, like them or don't.
Yeah.
The choices do matter, but they're about you. They're not about the game. And so I just don't like the phrase choices don't matter, because the words she says are definitely different, or the path to getting to the same point is maybe a little more curved. But I think that's worth pointing out.
That's a great way to look at it. If I'm thinking right now, in a sense that if I am playing her at that party, we'll take that party for example, and I've put so much effort into being friendly with these guys and trying to make these friends, and they turn on me, the emotion is huge of wanting revenge or you know, depending on what that situation is, or depending on how you feel, to either run away from this or burn them, you know, whichever way you want to go with that. If I play it the way that I played it before, whereas I'm thinking in her and saying that I don't want to be here and I don't like this, it again feels like, see, this is why I didn't want to be here. Right. Look what they've done to me. So it does, I agree with what you're saying.
And I agree with you that it is very, very awkward, but mostly because it's like, she's a witch, burn her. I was like,
show us your powers. I don't have any powers. Okay.
You're a witch.
You're a witch, burn her. Yeah.
I am agreeing that it is very awkward. I don't like taking the shorthand of convincing ourselves to agree to some completely wrongheaded cliche that we've been taught.
Yeah.
The choices do matter. They just don't matter in the same way. I don't know. It's they're fair accusations to be made about it, but they're also choices worth making because it is your playthrough.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I don't necessarily know that we're done with the talk of Beyond Two Souls, but when we do
Good
come back,
of it.
Yeah. But when we come back, we're going to talk with Cameron and Matt, both of whom are in the chat room actually right now. We're going to talk with those guys. They're from Jump Corps Productions. They've got a game called Undead Overlord. It is on Kickstarter. We're going to be talking with them coming up in. Hey, Cameron. We're going to be talking with them in the next hour. They're going to be calling us on the phone. So if you've got questions, throw them in the chat room. We will get to them, and we'll be talking to them coming up next on In Game Chat. We'll be right back. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. Music there from Advent Rising. On the show with us right now, we are going to the phones. We have got Cameron Petty and Matt Smith. I believe they're both on the lines with us. You guys there?
We're here. Yes. Hey.
All Actually, right.
Martin, by the way.
Or Martin, I'm sorry. I don't know why I had Matt Smith for some That's reason. Right. I don't know why I got that. But anyway, Martin Smith, my apologies. Thanks for calling into the show, guys, and welcome to In-Game Chat. We appreciate you being here tonight.
Hey, thanks. Our pleasure.
Yeah, I met you guys at it was at PAX. It was during PAX, but it was at the Seattle Indie Expo, I believe, is what it was.
Right.
You guys were down in the basement section.
Yep.
And you had you were in the corner of the basement section. And I just kind of stumbled upon your game and
to hide us away as best they could.
Yeah, I was really glad that I did. You guys are working on. I tell you what. Why don't you guys tell us about what who Jump Corps Productions are and what Undead Overlord is?
Okay, I guess I'll jump in. Jump Corps is a team of kind of comprised of some experienced game guys, some new up and comers. We're working on a. Zombie game with a bit of a twist where you get to play as the zombies. We've gotten a lot of inspiration from some of the classic goofy horror movies like Reanimator and Return of the Living Dead and things that are really kind of over-the-top, gory, boring on abject silliness. And that's kind of what we're looking for with our game. And you get to take control of a zombie horde and hunt and kill humans and add them to your horde and then combine them together to create boss zombie mutations and what else? It's an RTS game, effectively. It's kind of top-down-ish sort of view, and you're controlling units and squads of units and basically trying to take over the world.
Yeah, I really liked that aspect. I mean, zombie games lately are a dime a dozen, man. I mean, it's they're everywhere and in every aspect. But having a real time strategy where you control them, and the way that you had it done was realistic in zombie fiction, I suppose, where you start as one guy and everybody that you kill becomes part of your horde.
Right.
And you're so the resources of your group is your enemy, essentially.
Right, and that's kind of the one of the big twists in terms of gameplay, and where the game's going to differ a little bit from your standard RTS. There's not going to be a lot of resource gathering in your traditional sense. You're not going to be base building. It's more your enemy is your resource. So you're getting out there, you're finding the humans, you're adding them to your horde. So to some degree, the variation in resources will be what types of humans you're acquiring, right? Are they just civilians where you're kind of just harvesting them easily, or are they, you know, survivors or SWAT teams or the military where you're going to have to fight to acquire that resource, but you're not just destroying the enemy units, you're actually integrating them into your own forces.
Now, is this the first game that that Jump Corps is working on? Is this the first of their titles?
It is, yes.
Now,
we've been at it for quite a while. We've gone through some changes. We're kind of an interesting case in that we started out working on this kind of before there was a lot of momentum in the indie space, and have kind of found our way just through necessity into becoming indie developers, just because we haven't gotten the kind of response that we would have hoped for from publishers initially, possibly because the game's kind of weird and maybe a little bit edgy. I don't know. It's hard to tell sometimes when you're talking to publishers what they're actually thinking. But so we've basically come to the point where we're like, well, everyone we talk to who's a player and who's a developer really likes this idea and thinks it's cool and says, hey, zombie games are cool, but there are too many, and this is an interesting twist, so we'd like to see this. So we said, well, let's try and get this thing out there, you know, of our own accord. And that, of course, led us to, as you were talking about at the beginning of the show, the Kickstarter that we're currently running.
Right. You guys are on Kickstarter, and you've got 19 days to go. I believe it's 19 days to go left in the Kickstarter campaign itself. Now, this was a game, again, like I said, zombie games, dime a dozen type of thing. I was walking the floor of the Indie Expo there, and you know, you said, hey, you want to come check out Undead Overlord? And I'm like, well, that's another zombie game. Okay. All the demo kiosks that you had there were full at the time, so I had to watch somebody play. But the aspect of being an RTS and having that kind of control over the zombies instead of the humans type of situation was the big draw for me. And when you sat me down in front and I actually played it, that's when it hooked and I said, I really like this. That's when your card went into the other stack that I keep of, like, here's all the cards I got, to the let me send these guys an email when I'm done
right.
type of situation, which is exactly what I did. And I'm glad that we've stayed in touch through this. And I was surprised to see it on Kickstarter. I never really got to talk to you about how you guys were going to be making this. And I didn't know you were going to be going through Kickstarter to have to do it. That I'm glad for that, because good things can come from Kickstarter. I'm scared for that, because good things get missed on Kickstarter.
I hear you. And what you said at the beginning of the show also is very interesting. You know, we still got quite a ways to go. I have to say I'm a little bit concerned. I had hoped we'd be a little bit farther along than where we are right at the moment. But I was very much emboldened by your comments that greater lasts have been made up towards the end of projects. So we still have high hopes, and I think, you know, the biggest key for us is just getting the word out there. So doing stuff like this is fantastic. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, no. We love to have, you know, I mean, there's Kickstarters out there. Again, much like the zombie genre, Kickstarters are a dime a dozen out there, especially Kickstarters for games. You know, it's not necessarily we have to pick and choose the projects that come on, but anything that kind of catches our eye, I'm more than willing to talk about and have on. And hopefully that supports the Kickstarter, but mostly it's there to to learn about you guys making it and learning about people who have to go through these Kickstarters and have to, they've got this dream of this game that they want to build, and they've got to hope that these other people share in that dream enough that they can throw in the money to support it in order to get it made. It's a scary prospect, but
it really is. And it's a bit nerve wracking to go through the process as well.
Yeah. But you guys, this isn't the first game either of you have worked on though, is it?
No. I mean, I personally have been in the industry for a long time, since back in the early 90s, worked on Primal Rage was the first game I worked on, and then San Francisco Rush, and then helped co-found Cryptic Studios. So I've been around for a while and worked on a bunch of games. And, you know, I'm convinced at this point that I'll be doing that till I can't do it anymore, just because I love the process of building games. And whether it means doing it for the man or doing it independently, one way or another, I'll continue doing it, and hopefully there will be a market for the stuff I work on. I was just going to go back a little bit and say I was really glad that you got a chance to play the game at the Indie Expo, because that's kind of the reaction we've gotten from a lot of people, is people who don't look closely, you know, will say, oh, another zombie game, and be kind of dismissive of it. But people who have gotten actually to sit down in front of the thing and give it a try, for the most part, have gotten hooked and have said, wow, this is cool. This is something different.
Yeah. Is there any chance of you guys having something, some kind of demo playable before the Kickstarter is over with?
There is, and we're working on that. It's just, you know, we're still pre-alpha, and we haven't had it in a place where we feel like it's really ready to be released out into the wild, because there's some holes here and there. But so kind of what we're doing is we're just basically taking out a bunch of it and kind of slimming it down to something that will give people the idea, but we'll kind of keep the rails around where you can go in the game, so that the more obvious holes aren't freaking people out when they're giving it a try.
Now, we talk about, you know, it being scary to be on Kickstarter and things like that, but what has been the positives that you've seen coming out of building this game and using Kickstarter? What have you seen that has kind of been uplifting, I suppose, in when you check the numbers every day?
Well, comments, I guess I would say, have been, you know, comments from the backers have been really positive, and that's fantastic to get people chiming in and saying, hey, we think this is cool. And along those lines, interestingly, we also started a Greenlight page.
That's right, you're on Steam. Yeah, you're on Steam Greenlight, yeah.
We are, yeah, and that's been a huge just feedback in terms of positive reinforcement. That's got, I don't know, somewhere over 300 comments, and probably 98% of them are, you know, chiming in saying, hey, this looks really cool, and you know, stuff like that is, as indie developers, is really what kind of keeps us going and keeps us motivated to make this thing.
Yeah. Now, what is the, again, this is, I suppose, is this all determined on Kickstarter? If Kickstarter doesn't go through, what happens? What happens to the game after that?
That's a really good question.
Because I want to see it. I want to see it. I want to play it. Like I said, I was kind of happy that it was on Kickstarter, and then I was scared because I thought, oh, great. Now I have to rely on them hitting their goal in order to play this game that I really enjoyed playing the little time I had with it. So,
well, you know, if you had asked me that before we started the Kickstarter, I think my answer would have been, if Kickstarter doesn't go through, we're hosed. That's it. We're done. That was kind of before we did the Greenlight thing and saw this kind of huge outpouring of just positive reactions to the game. And we're, you know, we've only been on there a little over a week, and we're getting close to being in the top 100 on Greenlight already. So that's kind of made me, you know, possibly reconsider. Maybe we want to just tough it out and try and, you know, bootstrap this thing, even if the Kickstarter doesn't go through. But, you know, in the end, that's going to kind of come down to what the individual members of the team feel like, right? We'll see how it goes. When we cross that bridge, it's going to be, are there enough of the team still interested in continuing to work on this thing for basically nothing, right? We're up till now, we've been, you know, people have been putting in sweat equity and really kind of doing this just out of passion rather than for a paycheck. So if people are willing to continue doing that, we may make it. The downside is that regardless of what the team decides, certainly not getting the Kickstarter funded will slow down the development speed.
Right, yeah. And that's always sad to hear when it doesn't go that way. And I hope for the best. Like I said, I'm already a backer in it. I've already got got my support in for it and put my money in and put it on the tier that'll get me a copy of the game. So I really hope that it comes to pass. And even if it doesn't come pass through Kickstarter, I really hope that you guys are eventually able to make the game that you want. And is that something that you enjoy about being, an indie? I mean, how many people are at Jump Corps?
There's 8 of us at the moment.
Man, every time we ask indies this, the number seems to get smaller and smaller.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, okay. My goodness. Yeah, we talked to the Beta Dwarf guys for Forced, and I think they're a team of like 12. And we interviewed them not too long ago, and then we interviewed Zachtronics, and they're about the same one as you, about 10 or so, and then you guys down to 8 people making something.
I heard about what was that game, the Gianni Sisters, where you switch back and forth between the nice and the naughty world.
Uh-huh.
They apparently had like 36 people on their team. Like, wow, really? As an indie team, how can you even organize that?
Yeah, the indie team with 36 people or even more than that. I mean, Twisted Pixel, I think, we talked to them way many, many years ago, and they were at a staff of 7, and then that doubled to 14 by the time they had their next game. And it's only stretched up to maybe 25, I think, is still what they're sitting at. And they, Microsoft bought them. So, but yeah, it is interesting to see what gets out there with the amount of people that are working on it. And you guys only have 8 trying to make this game. And man, I really hope it happens, and I hope it comes through. What are you guys using to build the game with? Is this a Unity engine thing or what?
It is. Yes, we're in Unity.
Okay. That's one of the big questions that we usually get whenever we talk to some of the indie developers is what they use. And Unity seems to be the major thing that everyone uses here. So,
yeah, we're really just pretty much total Unity fanboys over here. We, for my part, having worked with a bunch of different engines over the years, I find Unity just really easy to work with. And yet at the same time, they're doing a really good job over there at continuing to add good features and really kind of bring the thing up to the point where it's competitive with any of the bigger engines out there. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Now, is there anything you want to tell people who are listening who maybe haven't checked out the Kickstarter yet or who have and they're kind of on the fence with this thing? I mean, is there anything you want to tell them as far as about the game itself and something that you can get across to them that maybe just doesn't come across in through the Kickstarter or through the video?
I think if you look closely at the video on Kickstarter, you'll probably get the idea. But I would just say, don't dismiss us off the cuff because we're yet another zombie game. Take a little closer look and realize that we're doing something slightly different, turning things around, and not only that, but trying some different things in terms of the gameplay with regards to RTS games.
Yeah, Matt in the chat room wanted to ask Cameron, have you ever worked with the Unreal Engine?
I have not. I cannot say that I have. I've worked with the Source Engine. I've worked with several proprietary in-house engines at companies I've worked at, but Unreal is probably the one large hole in my development experience, so... Sorry, no.
No, that's fine. Now, I would go into questions about how many levels are there going to be, what systems is it going to support, but being that you're on Kickstarter, it's very dependent upon Kickstarter, I suppose, to answer some of those questions, would it not?
To some degree, yeah. We've got a bunch of stretch goals, so that will affect that. We could talk about, what we have planned for the base game if we hit our base goal. The gist of that is that we're planning on doing the single player side of things with the zombie mission campaign, and about 11 missions that kind of take you through the story of going from pre-apocalypse patient zero up through post-apocalyptic fighting entrenched survivors, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last couple of missions, we're planning on trying to do something that's more control point based. We're kind of experimenting with something that's a little bit more replayable rather than the story oriented missions that you'll be playing early on. And of course, you know, our idea is, you know, we want to get it out there as soon as possible, get people playing it, get feedback, and continue working on the thing. And it's very dear to our hearts that we, at some point, make it to the point where the thing goes multiplayer, right? Because that's obviously...
You know what? I didn't even think about multiplayer. Normally I do on almost any game. You know, it's either... It either comes straight to mind of, does this have multiplayer, or it could work with multiplayer, or I just don't even think about it. And yours was not even one I even considered doing multiplayer with. I mean, everybody would want to play the zombies, would they not?
Yes, but I guess, you know, from our perspective, we want to play the zombies. We also like the idea of zombie versus zombie. So as far as we're concerned, if we were going to do multiplayer, it would be a free-for-all.
Yeah.
We really like that idea, but we also recognize that that's a huge difference in terms of amount of tuning and just the challenge of getting the game out there. So as a small indie team, our goal is get the minimum that we think will be fun and engaging for people out there and then iterate from there.
Yeah. Well, guys, we appreciate you being on the show and want to wish you the best of luck in getting fun. I sincerely say that. I know it's a common cliche sign-off thing when you have a guest on your interview type thing to say, hey, wish you the best and whatever. No, I put money in your thing. I want to see it succeed because I want it. I want the game. So,
that's awesome. Well, thanks for the backing. Hey, can I, before we sign off, can I make one request? Can you throw that last question out to Martin as well? Because I've just kind of yammered over him completely and not let him talk.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
You have to remind me of the last question since Cameron's been yammering away for so long.
The last question was the last question. Was it working? What was it working with?
What do you want to say to people about the game that they might not otherwise know?
Yeah.
I would say something similar, right? As a big RTS player myself, kind of, you know, that's what I kind of grew up with, and that's probably my genre of choice. I would say if you like RTS. Or you know, you're interested in zombies or anything, we've got kind of the dual twist going on, right? One is you play as the zombies, but the other is that you actually have a totally different kind of resource in the game. Mm-hmm. So we think that's going to bring in a whole lot of new kinds of gameplay that you wouldn't get otherwise. So check it out.
Well, like I said, both of you guys, Martin and Cameron, again, all the best with this. I know you got 19 days to go, but like I said, I put my money in this. I want it to succeed. So anybody listening, please check out their Kickstarter page. It's for Undead Overlord, and watch the video. I can't say that it's going to get you hooked or anything. If it does, that's great, but I really, guys, get a demo out there. I really wish that you could play it so that you could, so you really get that sense. I have played it and I really enjoyed it. I played a ton of games at PAX. I played a ton of indie games at this thing that are on Kickstarter now. And you don't see me endorsing those, not because they're bad, but this one hooked me and I hope that it works. So best of luck to you guys. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Awesome. Thanks, Scott. Thanks a ton for having us.
All right. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Cameron Petty and Martin Smith from Jump Corps Productions. Their game is Undead Overlord. Again, check it out on Kickstarter. Like I said, really fun game. I enjoyed it very much when I played it at PAX back in September. So they're trying to get the funding, and I hope they do. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to have more in-game chat on the way. We'll probably talk about Wolf Among Us, among other things, coming up next here on In-Game Chat. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In-Game Chat. My phone just updated me that Jeremy has backed Undead Overlord. You are the Horde. So Ghost Bear in the chat room, thank you for backing it. I know Cameron and Martin appreciate it, and I appreciate it, so that's great. Anyway, welcome back to the show. Gonna move on into Wolf Among Us talk, I suppose. That was the other game that released on Friday, actually.
Yep.
And this is another game from Telltale. It is based on the Fables comics from Vertigo, DC Comics Vertigo series.
Did I get an opportunity to tell you how stupid I was about that? I've known forever that Telltale was making, you know, following The Walking Dead.
Yeah, you did mention this. Yeah.
Of when is Walking Dead 2 coming up? And it's like, oh, well, they're doing Fables. And it's such a generic thing that I had no concept that it was actually based on the comic, on the graphic novel Fables, which I liked quite a bit. I didn't read all of it, but I did really like it, and I thought that it was a really good fit for them. I don't suppose you have any experience.
I heard of the title, but I didn't pick it up.
Okay. Are you aware of the premise? Are you aware of the setting of what the Fables universe presents? It's a fairly clever retelling of almost every fairy tale fable character that you can imagine. Everything from Snow White to Geppetto and Pinocchio and anything, if it has appeared anywhere in storied fairy tale fiction.
Yeah, see, this I played this just like I did with Walking Dead. I played this with Kim, and she had said we got to the part where we're in Ichabod Crane's office.
Right.
And we're searching through whatever. And then, of course, one of the flying monkeys from The Wizard of Oz comes over.
Sure.
And she's like, so this incorporates just fiction? Anybody from fiction? And I said, not necessarily fiction, because if you notice, there's a flying ship, which I'm sure is from Peter Pan. That's a novel. That's not a fairy tale, so to speak. That's not a Grimm's fairy tale type situation or anything like that. It's not necessarily a fable, but anything that has a... I don't know how you classify that. I mean, Ichabod Crane is not necessarily... that's a folktale, I believe, is what that is.
Yeah, sure.
Or was that written?
That was written.
Yeah, that was written. That's what it was. Yeah.
I mean, it's an actual piece of literature.
I'm trying to remember the guy's name, too. Anyway, be forever if I tried to figure that stuff out.
It's kind of like there's no hard and fast rule, I don't think, necessarily about it. But you'll know it when you see it, mm-hmm. You know, much like the definition of pornography. Like, I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it.
Right.
So you understand with the inclusion of certain things that they most definitely belonged there. And you have all of them living contemporarily in New York. And they are refugees from their fabled homeland who left after a war, essentially. And it's something that you learn more about over the course of the progress of the graphic novel. And it's just, it's an incredibly interesting place to play because they all have had to live lives either living in the city of New York, if they are human, or can be made to appear human by purchasing a glamour, or if they are too bestial, too monstrous, and can't afford to be glamoured, they have to live at the farm in upstate New York. And each of them plays a very specific role here in the mundane world. It's a role that's been assigned to them based on not just status and popularity, but on any number of factors, mostly about where they would be most interesting in the narrative, but that's besides the point. One of these characters is Bigby Wolf, the former big bad wolf, and he is the sheriff of Fabletown, where everybody lives. He's the peacekeeper, the caretaker, and his job is very much at odds with his former life, obviously. He is evolved to be very werewolfish, so he appears human most of the time. And he's just one of many characters in the cast where the graphic novel is concerned. But Telltale's take on the story is that it's going to center around him, and it's going to center around investigation of murder. And
which is why this might appeal to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you had mentioned for Heavy Rain, you like the murder mystery.
It was the
stuff.
Murder mystery aspect of Heavy Rain. That
there's
really
a lot of question, deduction, suspicion and everything else as far as very murder mysteries type stuff here. So you might be interested in this. Mm-hmm. In fact, this would be a good game for me to sign into your Steam account and do the game sharing.
Oh, the game sharing, sure, situation. Just to give you an opportunity to try it out.
Yeah.
Okay. It is also, as a mechanically, as a follow-on from The Walking Dead, it makes a number of improvements. There are an awful lot of things, given the nature of the character, how he is very violent, and about how a lot of the people in this world he's going to interact with violently. The conversation system is essentially what you know of in other games of this type, but it is much more action-oriented, and they've kind of tightened up a lot of the on-screen controls for that action. So it's not such a slow-paced affair for people who wanted a little more out of it. I think it's going to be frustrating for some people, perhaps, but I don't know. But anyway, my understanding, it's a typical Telltale, very, very much like Walking Dead, rather than typically that company. But it's 5 episodes, and it is canonical, supposedly, but it acts as prequel to the graphic novels, which I don't know if there's anyone who's interested in playing it who has not. I feel like the possibilities for spoilers are much greater than they were for Beyond, so I don't really want to say anything in particular, but
the ending of episode 1 makes me very confused on where this is placed. Obviously, yeah, it's early in the story, but and hopefully the next episode or the end of this entire season wraps up the situation with what just happened at the end of episode 1 so that it can run into the beginning of the comic books. It has to. If it's a prequel and if it's canonical, something is not right with that ending.
Right. Those two things and the nature of the story, they're in collision with each other and they have to be resolved. And that makes it interesting, I think, for everyone, because I remember going into this thinking it's a prequel. I know that violent crime, murder, these things are a part of the picture. How in the world can that be? Because I know who is present in the graphic novels. And they very much sort of look at you and go, oh yeah? Yeah? We'll have some of this.
Exactly.
And you're sort of left as a fan or someone who's at least read them thinking, all right, you have obviously invented some temporary set of rules or circumstances that mean I don't know anything.
Which,
and
if they haven't,
that's really,
if they,
good.
Yeah, if they had not have set that up and said this is a prequel, if they just said, here's a story that takes place in the world of the comics and this is canonical,
I would have been,
oh, wow, really? Right, you're going to stick with that? But then they add that this is a prequel, I thought, well, something's got to change. Or
there's just something that we don't know.
Off. Yeah,
which makes it extremely interesting. It means there's more to the mystery than simply whodunit. The entirety of the who, what, where, when, why, and how is up for grabs. And it's really interesting. And I think whatever else we may feel about some of these characters, because it's in its own way, the novels were heavily politicized, I suppose more from a social aspect. I don't know. It has been years since I read them, and I didn't find myself particularly sensitive to those issues when I did.
I didn't either. But I read the first collection, the first trade of the series, which I think collects the first eight issues, and then I read the one off of which is, by the way, really great recommendation for anybody interested. 1001 Nights of Snowfall. It's basically Snow White doing, you know, Arabian Nights, mm-hmm. And telling those stories, but involving the fable characters with it. And it's just an offshoot of anything. It has no bearing on the main story of fables itself. But those are the only two things that I've read. That's my only education in this that I know of that the game has not just already told me.
Sure. And there is a distinct,
there's a ton that,
yes,
the game
there
tells
is,
you.
There, it does. Yeah. And it, I think it does a fairly good job of explaining the universe and the nature of the universe to people who aren't familiar with the comics. It doesn't assume familiarity with the comics. But there are other things about the universe that, if you know, it helps to color the nature of the game.
Right, because the first time, when you see the woodsman get hit in the head with an axe.
And he doesn't.
I'm like, wow, he's
he just
gone,
kind
he's
of shrugs
goner.
It off.
Yeah,
you know?
He shrugs it off.
Right.
So,
he himself is extremely tough. Fables in general are extraordinarily difficult to kill.
Their lifespan is based on their belief.
On their popularity. On how, on what their kind of intangible...
Was it something like the mythology, like the more people believe in them,
the more real they are. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Something like that. Mm-hmm. And so there are specific examples about specific characters featured in this episode
mm-hmm.
that suffer incredible trauma in the comics.
Yeah.
So you look at their situation here and you're like, it's fine. What I know of the situation can kind of carry me past my questions about what's happened here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, whatever else it might be, it's a clever universe. It's an interesting place to play. You have to have an assumption that in almost every case, the fables that are featured are, and this becomes clear right off, these are not the Disney versions of these fairy tales. These are Grimm's and worse. These are the darkest, hideous, most cynical and unlikable, typically, versions of all of these people. There are very few happy stories in the history of any of these characters.
Right.
But it gives them a lot more depth and a lot more character. And what I was going to say earlier is that I think just based on this first episode, I think they've done a fine job of recognizing who these characters are meant to be in the comics, but not following like determination.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a little more flexibility to make them someone that you can agree with, someone that you can spend some time with, and don't necessarily have to, if you are a fan, look at them through the lens of the books, even though they are the same character. It is canonical. I think it's a really good project, and I really, really liked the first episode.
Yeah, although every single one of the people that I've met so far, you talk about these are not the fairy tales that you're used to type of thing. Every fable that I've met in the episode so far, with the exception of any female met, and I think Beast from Beauty and the Beast, everybody else, they're psychopathic or generally sleazy kind of people.
Right. Well, and if they weren't that way originally, they've been driven to this. Again, they are long lived. They've been in these circumstances. The narrative takes place in the 80s.
I remember.
It's in the 80s.
Yeah.
The art style tips you off a little bit, but it's absolutely where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And even at this point in the 80s, they've been refugees. Not even refugees anymore. They've been exiles, I suppose, almost for a century or so, maybe more than that. And many of them had wonderful circumstances in their homeland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of all the very many princes and princesses and lords and men and women of power in fable.
Mm-hmm.
And very few of them maintain any of that power or any of that wealth in this world. So they've had to live with whatever they could manage for a very long time.
Yeah, when you say exiles for centuries, I'm thinking lost souls now instead of refugees or whatnot. I mean,
right.
Really gone.
There is the nature of the conflict in their homeland is ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really encapsulate it because it's complicated. It's slow to develop in the story, but it is there.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, I didn't read past a certain point. And this game will probably not touch on it explicitly, though it may. But regardless, it makes for a really interesting backdrop to tell a story and works very, very well with Telltale's strengths in telling their story.
Yeah.
I think that judging by the reception from just about everyone I've read, if the first episode is any indication of where they plan to go, it's going to be a great series. I already liked the first episode of this far more than I liked the first episode of Walking Dead. And we know how popular that was.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was great. This one felt really good. About the same length, you know, 2.5 hours maybe,
mm-hmm.
depending on your thing.
And I need to go back to it because I've...
You know what, though? Very replayable. More replayable, in my opinion, than Walking Dead.
There are at least, and this is off the top of my head thinking, there are at least two significant choices to be made in this episode that I want to go back to and do the other one.
Where the action stops absolutely.
And you have a choice
to make. Not just like a quick conversational choice and not just a choice in combat.
A branching story
but choice. But a branching story type choice. Mm. Again, I don't expect it to run me down completely separate paths. But they make a big point. They shine a huge light on the fact that you're either going to do this or going to do this.
It's very apparent when you get to the end of it, and it shows you the choices compared to other people. And they make, because I didn't realize, because there's the way that they word one of those choices is, you decided not to blank and decided to do this. The blank that they put in there, I didn't even know the way that they word it seems like I can have an outcome on
that's
what I witnessed earlier. I can have a different outcome than what I witnessed earlier.
Yes. Mm. That maybe somebody could be
so
alive
very vague
instead
here,
of dead.
Yes.
That's entirely a possibility.
Which is
how long that'll last, I don't know.
Yeah.
You never can tell with them, and they're very, very good at this thing.
Speaking of, what did you do? I'm asking if you can tell me on that situation. On those two choices that we're talking about.
I don't have a guy that I otherwise could have living in the universe.
Okay.
That tells me
the one thing you, the, yeah.
Right.
And then the other
choice. I went to go address the call rather than advance the investigation.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
God, okay. Real good. That's really good.
And,
man, you're great. You're good at that.
On the second one, I took action against the newcomer.
Oh, same thing I did. Why did we do this? It's amazing how we did the same situation.
Because regardless of what Bigby was saying, I agreed with the person that was appealing against his better
nature. I did too. Yeah. I mean, I was like, yeah, man. I mean.
Which I think is great. I don't have to agree with the character.
I know. Yeah.
I don't mind doing that. And I think that Telltale has actually built a far better. And there were things that I said and thought that put me in conflict with. You spend a lot of time investigating with another character, with Snow White in particular. She's one of the city administrators, and you investigate with her at a certain point. And I found myself wonderfully at odds with her, and I think they've done a better job of not making you feel like a failure if you make a mistake or are put at odds with another character. It's just the natural outcome.
I was about to ask you, when you say investigation now, it's not like choices in the story. I mean, do you actually like go around looking for like clues and interacting with people?
You go to crime scenes.
You go to crime scenes or different environments, different locations, talk to people, how you interact with them. And that actually, I'm wondering if that might be one of the things that I don't have.
Hmm.
When you talk to a guy, the guy with the kid.
Yeah.
Were you aggressive with him?
Did you smack
him around?
No.
Okay, because I did.
Oh,
and his
God.
Kid was afraid of me.
Oh, wow.
I was wondering if maybe his card was one. You unlock character cards, and we're both missing a single character card.
We seem to be missing the same character card.
Yeah. Maybe that's not it then.
But then again, they're not just character cards, because one was a card explaining the farm.
Yes, one was explaining the Fable Town.
Yeah, so it could be, we're not exactly sure what it is we're missing. We're not exactly sure how these cards are awarded.
Right, and that's actually fine. Given the nature of these choices, the nature of the dialogue, I have no problem going back through this again.
No, not at all. I really don't. I get four saves to play around with, so I'll let Kim have one of hers, have that save, and then I'll go back and I'll play, and I'll deliberately make some of these other choices instead of... it'll be fun to do it that way, because just like Walking Dead, I let her make the decisions and I do the actions for this. Mm-hmm. And so she has her own save. I'll do a save now where I make all the opposite decisions that she made so that we can kind of see how this goes. And that'll be fun to do. I did not get a chance to do that with Walking Dead because we played Walking Dead all at one time. Mm-hmm. In other words, the game had already been released, got it on disc, and was trying to get through it so that we could talk about it on the show. Didn't have time to really do that comparison type stuff. So it'll be fun to do it with this.
And I think that I think their design really accommodates a lot more experimentation this time around. I don't know why I say that. I feel like it's just something subtle in the way that you're making choices and decisions. And I know that things come out to a certain... I have a question.
Okay.
There's a guy. You're not getting along in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
How's his arm?
I would say that. Let me see how I can put this. Yeah, he's.
Is he disarmed?
He's going to need to have that looked at.
Okay. I'm wondering if that's what it is, if maybe there's something there as well. I don't know. This is going to be really fun comparing our choices, which is one of the greatest things about games like this, is actually being able to talk to other people and compare your experience. They give you that option a little bit in the post-game breakdown where they show you and, you know, X number of people think this or did this.
Yeah. I was in the majority on almost all of them, actually.
I was in the minority in the terrible minority on one of them.
Suspect?
No. Oh. I was in the majority on Suspect. Mm. I tried to stay out of Beauty and the Beast's thing.
Oh, no, yeah, no.
I was like, I don't care.
So you didn't lie
I'm staying out of it.
You just stayed out of it.
He's like, staying out of what? And I'm like, whatever it is, I'm staying out of it. I'm not a marriage counselor, blah, blah, blah.
Now, we told Beauty that we would not lie for her. And yet, when we were given that option, we lied for her.
Yeah, you're terrible. Yeah. You're just like Big B.
No, I'll pass that message along because I didn't make those decisions.
Yeah. yeah, it's a lot of fun. I would recommend this over The Walking Dead. I know that The Walking Dead conjures an awful lot of fandom from a lot of different directions. It is much more recent. It is, you know, lately in the news quite a bit, depending on where you are.
Season 4 starts tomorrow, you know?
And who even cares? It doesn't matter. This is something that's been less well known, but is a really excellent fit for this kind of thing.
However, contains characters that are very well known.
Right, and a very interesting take on them. And almost every one of them has some fun, if not inversion, some fun spin. Beauty and the Beast, for example, are married, are both human. He is, you know, the saved prince, and she is the kind of tortured, strange girl you can imagine her to be. And he is fully normal, fully human, so long as there is no trouble in their relationship. The greater the problems she has with him, the more angry she is at him, the more he becomes bestial. He can't control it. It's controlled entirely by her. So it's an interesting kind of development.
He's very, you know, very much a hanger-on of her in that sense. Mm. Which kind of gets on her nerves at times to be like, I can't get some time away because he's very suspicious of how I feel towards him and that sort of thing. He's always trying to over-affectionate maybe or overdoing it and trying to win her affection to keep him human type of situation. But the other thing I was going to say, you bought just the one episode. I bought the entire season for $22. You bought just the one episode. How much was that?
Five.
So it's $5 if you just want to buy the one episode and try it. Are you PS Plus?
Yeah, I'm Plus.
Yeah, there's a chance that it'll be less for you, but I just know that in us talking about this, every 2 months I think we're gonna have an episode where we're gonna have about 30 minutes of discussion on the new show or the new episode that they release.
Mm-hmm.
So your own decision. And if I can get over there, if I can somehow log you in on my account for Steam to do that sharing thing, you can get an idea of it and get some playtime in with it. But so far, have enjoyed it a ton. So, what do we got next week? We have nothing next week, do we?
This coming week, no. We don't, I think, have anything, which is going to be, I guess, an opportunity to fill in the hole a little bit. Maybe backlog something. I've got an enormous pile of stuff to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, same here. I'm looking at that Borderlands 2 offer they're doing with the loot hunt. Especially they're doing, they just started yesterday, actually. I started working on that, so it's giving me a chance to shake the dust off and start playing that a little bit more. But other than that, really, there is nothing other than that, just a backlog to try to fill up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, well, that's it for us. The Star Wars Pinball Table Pack comes out this week. So there's that, and that's about, I don't know, there's probably some other stuff releasing, but none of the big stuff until next week for us. And then it's just going to ramp up from there. So anyway, thanks everybody for joining us in the chat room, as well as everybody listening on the stream or on the radio as well. Thank you, everyone who grabs us every week from iTunes or however you get us for later use. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to join us on Twitter, Facebook, our forums at colonyofgamers.com, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and our Twitch channel as well. And if you're on Steam, we have a Steam group that you can join up with over there and play games with us and other listeners. Just look for in-game chat in the community, the group stuff there. So we really appreciate you guys joining us. And thanks again to Cameron Petty and Martin Smith from Jump Corps Productions for their Undead Overlord talk with us tonight. We appreciate that. And we will see you guys next week. Thanks for joining us.